Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we're back with another episode of the Startup Hustle. This is your host today, Matt Watson. Very excited to be joined today with Doug Ludlow from Main Street. He's going to tell us all about how to save money on our taxes. And as a startup or small company, we're always looking for tax credits and how to save money. And I've taken advantage of some of those in the future. So I'm hoping he gives us some secrets today about how we can save more money on our taxes. Do want to remind everybody that today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by EquipBids Auctions, your Midwest online auction marketplace to buy and sell stuff. EquipBid provides dedicated support to affiliates in Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, and Iowa. Join the team and sell everything from heavy machinery to home goods, vehicles and boats, to tractors and furniture. Go to equip-bid.me/startup for details, or just click the link in the show notes. Doug, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, super happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So you are the CEO of Main Street. I guess, first of all, tell us a little bit about what does Main Street do?
So Main Street's pretty simple. We act almost as a bridge between startups and small businesses and the government, especially specifically government tax credits and incentives. Every year, like literally hundreds of billions of dollars are earmarked for incentives that, you know, people want to go to small businesses and startups, right? Helps, you know, stimulate the American economy. It's that small business growth that, you know, everyone, regardless of political parties, excited about and interested in providing. And yet, because it can be difficult to discover these credits, difficult to claim, something like 97% of this goes unclaimed by startups and small businesses. And it's usually just the big guys, the Amazons, the Boeings, that take advantage of this. So Main Street makes it super easy to discover and collect these tax credits and incentives.
But you guys are not like an accounting firm or don't do any of that kind of stuff. You just only specialize with the tax credit.
That's exactly right. Yeah, we are not an accountant. We're not an accounting firm. We work with companies and their accountants. You can think of us like we're a software tool, right? We use the data. It actually works really cool. You connect your HR system, you connect your payroll, you connect your accounting, and we use the signals embedded there to use that to intelligently match you with credits, right? Do all the legwork. It's the type of thing to where most accountants do not do this work because they're not trained. Your average small business or startup accountant actually doesn't know how to file the R&D credit, doesn't know, you know, there's a long list of credits that most accountants don't do. So we have the platform that takes care of that for you and your accountant.
So how did you guys get started doing this? So like when was Main Street was started 3 years ago. Sounds like you guys have grown very rapidly. And yeah. were you one of the founders?
I am. So founder and CEO. And really we spent the first, we started almost exactly three years ago, October 2nd, 2019. And the first 6 months were spent really trying out a lot of different ideas. The mission's always been from day one, to help create jobs and opportunity for those who don't have it, right? But we tried a lot of different concepts. And one of the big ones was, hey, can we get people to move out of big cities and bring their startups or bring their small businesses to rural and suburban areas? I thought, how do you, this is before COVID, before that became a very popular thing to do.
Yeah.
We were kind of hipsters on that front. But during that process, we learned all about this giant invisible network of local incentives, $10,000 to move to Tulsa, Oklahoma, $10,000 moved to Vermont, or these different, 10% back for doing, R&D in a state. And, we recognized that there's this huge multi-hundred-billion-dollar network that exists of government credits and incentives that, you're just going to miss out on because they don't exist. And that was a big opportunity. We did not start out trying to do tax credits, but very clearly that became what resonated with customers, with the market. And yeah, we've grown. We launched this version of the product about 2.5 years ago, maybe in July. It was July 22nd, 2020. And growth has been very strong. It's been a bit nuts.
So the tax credit portion of it that you've been doing for the last 2.5 years was actually kind of a pivot. That wasn't the original idea.
That was a pivot. I think we often say we would remain true to our mission the whole time, helping create jobs and opportunity. But this probably was the fourth or fifth idea we tried in those first 6 months. I'm a big believer that, the idea you have when you start, odds are it will not be the idea that scales. And you have to be really flexible in those early days, figure out what is the market actually saying? What are customers actually saying? We're not dealing with something that requires deep, deep, deep research before it's viable, right? This is not a drug, right? This is not a deep piece of technology. So really it's a market risk, and you have to pivot and move fast until you get there.
So what was the very first idea? The very first idea was just had to do with creating jobs.
You're going to laugh at the very first idea. It was to create a suburban and rural version of WeWork, co-working for the suburbs. The idea is, wouldn't it be great in rural cities to have a place where startup founders can go, have all the same access to, creative talent, jobs, recruiting, et cetera, that you get in the cities. And, we got excited about doing this. I grew up in a city called Modesto, which is kind of the middle of California, Central Valley, pretty much agricultural. And they actually could use something like this, a remote work hub. So we kicked that off. And of course, it was at the same time that WeWork was trying to go public, totally tanked, and kind of killed for a couple of years the co-working industry. A lot of their competitors went out of business. And so we very quickly realized, we are not going to be doing this business. No one's going to want to fund this. But we kept that spirit of how do we create jobs, and went through a couple different things.
Well, I think this is great. I think it's great for the listeners because a lot of times what we start from our business idea, along the way there, we learn and we adapt and pivot and change. And it's kind of like my last company, my goal had to do with helping software developers monitor and do troubleshooting for applications that they were supporting. And the original way that I thought I would solve that problem, and then eight years go by, and the way that we originally, we eventually did it was a little different, right? Totally. So, a lot of startup journeys are that way. And so I think that's why it's great to really highlight that. So I think what I would love to know is how did you come to this point at Main Street? What did you do before Main Street that kind of led you to here?
Sure. So I've kind of always been an entrepreneur, if that makes sense. I don't love the word entrepreneur. But started when I was a kid. I ran a lawn mowing business back in the day, sold candy door to door that I made. In college, I started a textbook import business. We'd import them from overseas, sell them here for a significant discount. I did go to college for history and political science. I thought I was going to be a lawyer. I got a job in politics after college, thinking I was going to law school. I'm really, really glad I didn't. Nothing against lawyers, but it just wouldn't have been for me. And actually got into the technology startup bug, really soon after college. I started a side project, a company with a friend that absolutely went nowhere. But from then on, so really the last, 16 years, been going back and forth between, starting a company and then going to a big company, right? Starting a company or working for someone else's startup. I've had some successes. I've had some failures along the way. And it's really given me the opportunity now at Main Street to have seen, you know, what is it like day one at a company, right? What are all the things you have to do? I've also seen, you know, Google and actually Google's ads team. I was at Google right before I came here. I was the chief of staff for Google's small business ads unit. It's like this $20 billion ad unit. So I got to see what a company looks like when it's functioning really well at scale. I also was, one of my companies was acquired by AOL years ago, but it was the AOL that was in the middle of like declining across the board. So it was interesting to watch what does it feel like in a company where things aren't going well and what are those signs. So all that's, you know, you put that all in a blender. And the things serve me really well for what I'm doing at Main Street now. How do you stay scrappy yet build for scale? How do you track when, you know, things are going right, et cetera. So it's been a long road, but everything I learned along the way is, you know, is serving me now.
So if I'm an entrepreneur and I'm listening to this right now, what should I be thinking about in regards to the types of tax credits?
Sure.
So for example, I think R&D tax credit is probably one of the most common ones. And one of my companies was able to take advantage of that. But I'd love to hear more from you about the various types of tax credits that are common that people should definitely know about.
Sure. Well, there's two whole different categories of tax credits. One are credits that the company can access for itself, and others that employees can benefit from, but through their connection to the company. And so I'll talk about that. On the company side, the R&D tax credit is huge, right? And it's still underutilized. It's something that was started in 1981, primarily as a way to help American aerospace companies during the Cold War maintain an advantage, right? And an edge. And it's grown over the last 40 years, has expanded to cover software companies and really become more and more accessible to small businesses and startups. In fact, it changed in 2016 to where companies can get, R&D tax credit applied to the payroll tax, which means you save even if you're not profitable. So the R&D, it's if you're a startup, if you're a small business that does anything technological or anything new, it's a great credit to use. And there's actually 56 different state credits available in 38 different states that actually mimic the R&D, the federal R&D program. So
that sounds like a nightmare to keep track of.
Well, that's what we do as a business. You know what I mean? Like, one way to think about Main Street is we're kind of like Plaid, but for tax credits, right? Plaid, it's really hard to integrate with all these banks. They do it for you. We're actually very similar in that, we're trying to bring order to this kind of crazy, chaotic, but incredibly valuable system. So start with R&D. It will likely be one of your larger credits, especially in your early days.
What else? Is there any other great kind of business? You said there were employee specific and then business specific. Are there other good examples of the business?
Well, let's talk about business specific, right? If you're like most businesses, you're going to invest some money every year in actually making sure that your company is, can be used by people with disabilities. So there's a disabled access credit to where you're actually able to get about 50% back of what you spent. You're making sure your website's more accessible, making sure your physical building's more accessible. There's something called the Work Opportunity Tax Credit. That's a collection of actually 9 different subcredits that come from hiring people from disadvantaged backgrounds or people who struggle. For example, if you're a veteran or a wounded veteran, or if you're someone who's used public assistance, et cetera, there's a significant amount of capital to hire and employ these people. So the list kind of goes on and on. On the tax credit side, there still is a few remaining, COVID tax credits, the employee retention credit. There's actually a credit you can get for giving your employees time off to get vaccinated or to recover from COVID. Those, of course, are going away as COVID, kind of recedes. But if you look at, start with R&D, try to make sure you're checking for WOTC, the Work Opportunity Tax Credit. Those combined can save you literally hundreds of thousands of dollars per year.
Well, and so my last company was based in the state of Kansas, and we were able to take advantage of something called the PEAK program, which I think stood for like promoting employment across Kansas. I think it's what it stood for.
Sure.
But I think a lot of states have similar programs to like that. And it had to do with like it was primarily based on where you were like leasing a new office space and like how many jobs you'd be creating in that office or in that location. And you'd get some like state matching funds or state credits on what you would normally pay, like employment tax on the state contribution or whatever. And but it was cool. We took advantage of that, and that was a big advantage for us. And are there a lot of states that do those kind of like just creating jobs in the state or creating jobs in the city kind of stuff too?
There are literally thousands of them.
Okay.
Like literally thousands. And you know, it's our vision. We'll eventually have them all on the platform someday. They're all pretty one-off at this point though. So it's not like things you can standardize well, but no, there's some fantastic programs, especially in states that are trying to compete for credit, right? California and New York, they already have plenty of people coming. They don't really do much there, but
yeah.
I mean, for example, the cities do. The city of Sacramento has a whole program where if you come in, set up an office or a store in downtown Sacramento, you get $100,000 for doing that and employing 10 people over 3 years.
Wow. Right?
No, it's kind of nuts across the board. But hey, for them, it increases the tax base. It helps stimulate the economy. It's a far better way to do so. All across the board in many states. Actually, Utah and Oklahoma are two of the best states for promoting these type of programs. Again, you look at what are the states that are aggressively trying to build, especially technology businesses and technology industries. You look at like Utah and what you see in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's kind of models for the rest of the country who's trying to compete. Really, I think more of these things should exist, not less. If we're up to me, my hometown, Modesto, I live in the Bay Area now. What would it be worth to have incentivized a startup with 100 people
before? Yeah.
Was it to incentivize Google to start hiring engineers there, right? What that will do for your economy over the next 50 years is pretty extraordinary.
Well, so I'm living in Kansas City, and actually this whole topic is actually been a big topic from a business perspective for a long time, because the state line goes right down Kansas City. There is the Missouri part of it and the Kansas part of it. And a lot of people actually work in a city called Overland Park, Kansas, in that area. And there are a lot of jobs there. So we had headquarters of like Sprint, which is now T-Mobile. Wow. And there's a lot of jobs there. But the problem is all these companies just fight this stupid war and go back and forth over the state line, which it's not the same as like, oh, you're in San Francisco and you get some tax credits if you move to Portland. Like, it's a big damn deal to move to Portland or something, right? Where here, it's like literally like 1 mile. Like, I rented an office like just down the street, and all of a sudden I get a bunch of tax credits. And so here, it's actually been a big problem and a hindrance. And actually, I think the states kind of called it off eventually. So I think like 2 or 3 years ago, the states finally said, look, we're going to do these tax credits, but if you're moving from Missouri to Kansas, you can't get them. If you move from anywhere else, you can get them. They finally had to call off the war, because it was like an insane war that was going on where we live, jumping back and forth over the border.
I've heard about that exact problem. It's kind of funny, but also is a huge waste of everyone's time and resources.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're not simulating anything. It wasn't
creating anything at that point, because the people lived wherever they lived. Like, our employees lived wherever they lived. It didn't even matter, you know.
You're starting to see a shift to smarter incentives. I mean, probably one of the worst cases for the last 10 years was Scott Walker, and I believe it's Wisconsin, with this Foxconn plant. And Wisconsin pledged, I believe, something like $100 million to this, maybe even more, and ended up creating a few dozen jobs, right? Is one of those, it's kind of those last, last waves of old school. Hey, government's going to put hundreds of millions of dollars up. A lot of those type of incentives get washed away. What's the and an interesting thing about modern technology though, is now that now that your HR systems are smart, right? They're like cloud-based. You can actually track our incentives actually hiring people. Is this actually working? I can see every dollar I'm spending incentives eventually trickling through, and oh, that resulted in X amount of jobs. So you're able to be far more target tax credits and incentives now in a way you couldn't before. And that's thanks to this, you know, the rise of smart business tools. It's kind of cool. Hopefully government will waste less money and instead incentivize in hyper-targeted ways that was simply impossible to do before.
Well, as a reminder, today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Equip Bids Auctions, an online marketplace dedicated to growing small auction businesses. They're solving problems and providing a fun re-commerce or liquidation shopping experience to valued bidders. Go check out their incredible offerings and sign up at equip-bid.me/startup or look for the link in the show notes. So you also mentioned incentives to the employees.
Yep.
And I've heard about some of those. You mentioned Tulsa earlier, and I'm from Kansas City. Tulsa is not very far away. It's a couple hours away. I'm actually from Oklahoma myself. And I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And I think you hear this, especially for like things like doctors, right? Like rural doctors and things where like there's some little city out in the middle of nowhere that has like no doctor. And they're like, hey, we'll pay your student loans. Just come live here.
That's right.
Right.
So that's a whole wave of incentives. Right. And the Tulsa Remote Program is probably one of the best examples of being the first or one of the first. You know, we'll pay you $10,000 to take your remote job and move to Tulsa. It's interesting to see how these things are going to shake out in the post-COVID world, to where many companies are now totally fine with taking a remote job. It used to be something that was a little exotic, not necessarily something that was stable. Now that many companies are allowing you to be remote, I think you're going to see a massive rise in these type of programs, where if I can now start to compete for awesome employees who make a lot of money, the multiplying effect is huge. There's probably different 30 or 40 different states and cities that offer some variation on this program. My guess is that the numbers are going to go up. It generally was $10,000. What's it going to do to, you know, for example, attract that high-paying engineering lead or that, to your point, that doctor? That's a whole wave of relocation incentives that's huge.
Well, I think there's definitely a wave of at least those who have the types of jobs that they can work remote of moving out of these more congested areas. And actually, yes. Our company Full Scale in the Philippines is a great example of this. Most of our employees are in Cebu City, and most of them would, you know, spend over an hour a day just commuting one way to the office.
Sure.
And all of our employees were required to work in the office. And once COVID happened and all that, we went remote and honestly never thought we would do that. We were kind of anti-remote before it started.
Sure.
And now everybody works remote. And so everybody saves probably 2 hours a day in commute time.
Jeez.
And a lot of our employees have since then moved. Like now they went to the other side of the island or a different island. They're living with their family out kind of in the countryside, like literally on the beach. And they just work remotely for us writing code. Right. But that's awesome. Now that sounds a little better than going to Tulsa. I take the beach over Tulsa, but it just goes to show, like, I think we're going to continue to see a lot more of that with remote. And I work remote. The company I work for, I work remote. And wherever I work for next will be remote. I have no interest in working in an office. I love working remote.
Sure. And you'll start to see that the smart cities, the smart states will start incentivizing that, especially for people early in their careers. If you can grab someone when they're wanting to start their first company, or if they're right out of, you know, business school or really whatever, like, how great would it be to help them set roots as remote employees somewhere that's, you might not traditionally be able to move to? For example, Bend, Oregon has been something like the population has spiked over the last 3 years because it's swarmed by people wanting to live in a beautiful area and have a real job. Like, this, you're seeing that's why Miami had such a huge wave of people moving there. Because, again, Miami's a cool place to live. It's not cheap, but it's cool. And the smart cities will take advantage of that.
You know what you need to do? You need to start a company that does co-working in these smaller cities.
Hey, if only someone had thought of that. I actually think that there's, you know, thankfully we're on to something pretty good right now. But I think now that would be a huge opportunity for someone to start. You'd make a lot of money.
At some point, I like working remote, but it would be nice, you know, once a week to meet up with some colleagues or whatever. And, you know, a lot of us spend most of our time with our coworkers. Like, those are some of the best friends we make, like, in real life, right? So I think that is the one part of this that a lot of us will miss from working remote is not having those same personal relationships with coworkers.
I agree.
So tell me a little more about your platform. So you're saying if I use Paychex, I use QuickBooks, I use Common Accounting and payroll systems, you know, and there's a lot of them, but so your guys' system is able to just like plug into the data feeds of those and then somehow magically tell me and all the employees how we could be getting these tax credits?
That's exactly right.
Sounds like magic.
So it's the type of thing, you know, when we're raising money, venture capitalists always ask the why now question, right? Like why is now the time right for Main Street? And, you know, 5 to 10 years ago, we couldn't have done this because your HR systems and your businesses were dumb, where they didn't talk to each other. They were, you know, they're not cloud-based. Here, though, the fact that like over the last 5 years, pretty much any modern company is going to use a Gusto or a Rippling or a QuickBooks Payroll or a Xero, you know, one of those platforms that actually starts to talk to each other, right? So what we're able to do is our first breakthrough, you can go and pull all the data, start parsing it and do all the things that, you know, an accountant will had to do manually, but we can save basically 100% of that time. It's all done automated, right? So we've already cut out, you know, we're already infinitely faster than an accountant on that side. And now that we've seen thousands and thousands of companies go through, we start to see like, we can start making suggestions based on companies like yours do certain things. And it gets more and more sophisticated. So it does feel like magic, but really it's just because technology is smart now and we're able to leverage that.
So do you have any good stats on how much the average small business can get in tax credits and government incentives?
There's a wide range, right? Because it depends on
$1 billion.
Yeah, exactly. So our average company right now saves about $100,000 a year on the platform. But though we are our main target market are companies. There's we call them like technology oriented, growth oriented small businesses. So we don't. I mean, we can work with anyone, but we focus specifically on those people who are tech savvy and looking to grow. So startups fall into that category. You know, small business owners who want to grow their business and you know leverage technology. And that works well because we're able to tap into R&D credits. We're able to tap into hiring credits. There's a lot of things we're able to do there. So the average, if you're a tech-oriented startup, yeah, you're looking at hundreds of thousands of dollars. If you're a small business, though, and this is something like a true mom and pop, WOTC is your best bet, the Work Opportunity Tax Credit, because that's something to where, for example, I mentioned that's the program that helps employ people who may struggle to get jobs. About 50% of all people employed by restaurants qualify for this, right? So a restaurant, you know, you're looking at $2,400 to $9,600 per employee, right? Restaurants could pay a huge amount, like if they're tapped in properly, can save an enormous amount of money, right? Using the WOTC credit alone. So I guess my point is it really depends on what type of company you're doing, but almost any company, so long as you are either hiring or doing certain types of activities like growing, or investing in R&D, everyone should be able to save literally thousands of dollars per year. What you on the company side, you won't really be able to save is if you're not hiring anyone, if you're not growing, if you're very comfortable being just you know where you are, because the government wants to incentivize hiring and growth and development, right? That's where the money is. On the flip side, though, what's the thing that actually I think I skipped this. Employees can now take advantage of a ton of credits that are connected with their employers. For example, your employer can now pay tax-free your student loans for you, right? So, you know, up to $5,500 per year. So you're saving, let's say 30% of your income usually goes to taxes. So you'd be saving $1,600 per year if you had your employer pay rather than you. There's things like that for childcare. There's things like that for commuter tax benefits. The list goes on and on. And when you start to add in those, any employee across the country, small business or big business, should be taking advantage of those. We call them cooperative credits because you can't claim it as you're on your own as an individual. Your business can't claim it by itself. It really is at that intersection of cooperation between the business and the employee. So that's that. You know, it's not going to save your business that much. The great thing is that your business no longer has to pay payroll tax on that, so you're going to save about 10% there. But it's great.
Let me, So let me ask you this. So my the company I work at now, we have like 50 or 60 employees or something like that. But we've hired probably 30 of those this year. Is it too late to take advantage of some of this, or are some of this still retroactive that, like, you know, we could still get some benefit from the people we already hired? Or
100%. Like 100%. So it depends on which program, right? But anyone, you know, for example, we should talk afterwards and sign up for Main Street, see like which of these employees are doing, you know, supporting or conducting or supervising research and development, which of these employees you can, you know, see if they qualify for any tax credits. And then 100% of these employees, if they have student loans, you know, you can pay that. If they have childcare, you can pay that. There's a lot of things you can do there.
So I love the student loan one. So that's not necessarily where as the company, like I'm going to all my employees and saying, oh, I'm giving everybody $5,000 a year for free, but it could also be something they just opt into as an employee to say, so the employee, it's sort of like, hey, instead of getting direct deposit, I want to take 10% of my money and do this with it or something. They could do something like that.
It's called a pre-tax benefit, right? It's very similar to a 401k or like a health savings plan, right? Things to where it gets deducted as your income pre-tax, right? And so you sign in the background a salary reduction agreement. It's the same exact thing you do when you do an HSA or a 401k. But that's awesome. This world has exploded. I'd actually argue it's the fastest growing type of tax incentive because it's, you know, it lives that intersection of business and an employee. And because platforms are now smart, right? It becomes a lot easier for the employer to implement something like this. You just flip a switch and everyone starts to save money. It's really powerful.
So basically if 10 of my employees did this and that went to $50,000 a year in student loans, I would basically save as a company, you know, maybe 10, 20% or whatever it would be that the company would have paid in taxes on that money. So not only does it save me money, but also saves the employee money.
In the end, you'll say like counting like your company's benefit and plus your employee's benefit, you'll basically get 40% back on average in the end, because you'll get 10% as the company and they'll get about 30%. It's shocking. And this is the reason like our business exists. No one takes advantage of this, or very few people do, right?
I never heard of it till today.
No.
I'm learning new stuff today. This is good.
And there's all sorts of things. Like we talk about remote work. There's, if you set up an accountable plan for your employees, certain expenses can be paid for tax-free, like, you know, internet for home uses, home office usage. There's a long list. You have to be careful to not, you know, that you're categorizing everything correctly. But there's a lot of incentives that just people don't take advantage of.
So how does Main Street make money? How do you guys make money from what you're doing here?
We don't make money unless you do. So we have, you know, unlike accountants or consultants who, you know, they have to pay for their time. So they're going to charge you, you know, upfront, guaranteed going to cost you thousands of dollars or something like this. What we do is it's a 20% success fee. For every dollar we find you that you weren't going to get otherwise, we get 20%. Along with that, we provide full audit protection. If anything goes wrong, we'll be there to support you and cover 100% of errors we might make. We set you up with, you know, a ton of all the, we basically handle all the ongoing work that you'd have to pay an accountant or a consultant to do throughout the year. So it's a win-win model. We only make money if you make money.
Well, that's awesome. So you also hold our hand. So if I go back and say, hey, we need to do this R&D tax credit, no idea what that hell that means or how to do it.
Sure.
Do you guys like help with like holding our hand and like going through the process? Like how much do you help with that part of it?
So we try to make it as much as automated as possible. But by automated, we mean user-friendly and easy for you to use. If you have any questions along the way, though, we do have an accounting team that can answer questions and provide guidance, again, for free as part of the service. So it's, you know, this is one of those things to where we can technologically, in fact, you can go through without ever talking to a human being, but given that it's taxes and people don't understand it, I think people are pretty comforted to find that, you know, if they have a question, they'll have an expert right at their fingertips.
Well, I don't know about you, but taxes is the thing I don't want to screw up. So I appreciate that you guys provide good customer service for that.
We try.
Well, so what is your best advice for startup funders right now struggling with the economic crisis that is going. Do you see, is what your guys are doing, does that something that can help with the economic crisis and kind of what we're seeing going forward here?
Oh, it can certainly help, right? You should take advantage of, you know, if there's tax credits you can get, you should get them, right? But it's not going to, I think tax credits by themselves will not, you know, fundamentally change the trajectory of your business, right? So this is in addition to grab whatever discounts you can on software, on tax credits, et cetera. Really, I think just controlling burn for the next 6 to 12 months while we're in the middle of this crisis, that's by far the most important thing you can do, right? Focus on, you know, proper unit economics. You know, if you're a startup, you know, small businesses that aren't funded by VCs are by their nature more disciplined because, you know, it's usually out of the owner's pockets, or if there's investment, it's from friends and family. You don't want to blow it. So traditional small businesses tend to be more disciplined. Startups, though, you know, during a bull market, you're not encouraged to be disciplined. You're encouraged to spend. So many of these companies now are stuck in I'm so used to spending $5 million a month. What do I do when I can't do that? So I guess my advice would be, you know, go through, cut what you can. Save heavy growth for later and focus on efficiency, and you'll be well served to make it through the downturn. You'll probably emerge as one of those great businesses.
Well, and it sounds like some companies can save a lot of money on the tax credit side, that there's some hidden money there that they might find in their couch cushions that they didn't know was there. So I think
very much so.
That's really awesome. Well, once again, this episode of Startup Hustle was sponsored by our friends over at EquipBid Auctions. Join, sell, and earn. It's that easy with EquipBid Auctions. Become an affiliate and start to grow your independent business by visiting equip-bid.me/startup today. Even easier, head to startuphustle.xyz, click on our partners page. You'll see EquipBid's founder Andy has everything set up for you to go make some money. Go build your business within a business. Well, Doug, thank you so much for being on the show today. Curious if you have any, you know, last nuggets of wisdom for our listeners out there as an entrepreneur, you know, any other final tips or advice? It doesn't have to be about taxes, it could be about anything. Sure.
Something I say a lot is to avoid the illusion of progress, right? Being a founder is really hard, and what you choose to spend your time on really needs to be the, you know, stuff that actually moves the needle. Like, it's really easy to spend a lot of time talking about things that, you know, for example, spending way too much time figuring out, hey, what do we want to have in our office, or what color should this, you know, part of the logo be, etc. You know, and maybe sometimes that's important, but it's so easy to fill your plate with stuff that keeps you busy, but it's not actually moving the needle. It's what I call the illusion of progress. Like, when you're busy all day long, but you step back and go, I didn't actually accomplish anything. I think I've found that my most effective times as a leader and as a founder are maybe where I do one key thing a week even, but it is the thing that mattered above all else, right? You'll find as a startup founder, you know, maybe one or two things you do actually has a huge impact, but you shouldn't rank those equally with other things. Avoid the illusion of progress. Make sure that, you know, money, you can always raise more money or get more money or sell. You can't get more time. That is your most precious resource as a CEO, as a founder.
Yeah, I think a lot of people fall into the trap of feeling like they're busy, but they're not necessarily productive.
100%. Right?
And that's the thing.
Agreed.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. Again, this was Doug Ludlow with Main Street, and that is mainstreet.com, right?
That's right.
So, so if somebody wants to sign up and give this a try, and honestly, not sure why they don't, this is a sure. new sponsor from you guys, but it sounds like an amazing opportunity. They just go to mainstreet.com, and is it all pretty automated, like setting, like hooking things up to like QuickBooks and on Gusto and all those things like that? Or do they set up a call with you guys and go through a big process, or how does that work?
You can totally go and sign up on your own. You can also sign up to talk to an account executive who can walk you through the process. We want to make it self-serve as we can, but it's complicated. It can be scary. So we also have people who can walk you through.
All right. All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today, Doug.
Hey, truly my pleasure.
All right. Thank you.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.